Welcome to Crime and Wine. I'm Pamela Fagan Hutchins, your host, and this is the show where I talk with other crime fiction writers about the stories of thrills and suspense that will leave you mystified, sometimes horrified, and always wanting more. Please join me in welcoming today's special guest. Hey, you guys, it's Pamela Fagan Hutchins. You should know that if you join the show. It's Crime and Wine, and I am so excited about my guest today for about a zillion reasons. I'm going to hold you in suspense for a second. Just know that we're going to talk books, we're going to talk Maine, we're going to talk adventure, crime, art, being on magazine covers, you know, whatever crosses our mind. We're going to have a lot of fun. You can leave your live comments and we will do our best to get to them and answer them. I do want to point out that you should be heading out to my website at some point to see what guests are upcoming, read their books, find out more about them to prepare you for questions. And while you're out there, be sure and pick up some of my new releases. It won't hurt my feelings, not a single bit. Now, let's get to the good stuff. Today, we have Bruce Robert Coffin. Hello. How are you out there?
Good. Hi, Pamela. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. I am really, really excited to have you. I've enjoyed watching you on social media over the years, your books and everything. I'm a fan, and I know how excited my listeners and viewers are too. So thanks for coming.
You.
So I am full of questions and I can't even decide where to start. I'm so bad about being spontaneous that I don't plan these things. I don't know about you when you get on these, but it's just like, what am I going to say? But I do want to start, I think, with saying that it's very exciting that the series you have coming out is in some ways so different and others the same as things you've done before. So first of all, can you tease everybody a little bit about the series that's coming out in April?
Oh, sure. Well, I can't think of any better way to tease them than to see one of the brand new copies of The General's Gold.
My gosh, you guys that are only listening with your ears, you are missing out. It is pretty.
Very excited about the blurb on the lower portion here from Karen Dion.
You know, your blurbs are outstanding. I just saw the Hank Phillippe Ryan one today.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah, no, we're still riding high on that. Lindy, I think Lindy cried when she opened up that email. So
I would have cried if I was her.
Right.
You know, and I do you mind if I read it to everybody?
Because no,
I
go
have
right
it
ahead.
Here. Go I'm just going to go ahead and say that the Hank Phillippe Ryan said, completely entertaining, fast-paced, fun, and absolutely cinematic. This is National Treasure meets Romancing the Stone meets The Da Vinci Code, and the oh-so-talented Walker and Coffin have created an irresistible story. Attention, Hollywood, this is your next big box office adventure. I could not turn the pages fast enough. So, you know, I just want to know, how much did you pay for that?
Right. Geez, you might have overshot. I just wanted her to like it, you know. Yeah, Hank is such a great, she's such a great friend. She's been such a big supporter over the years. I think she was one of the first writers I got to read one of my Detective Byron books and give me a blurb. I think it was like the second Byron book.
I love it.
And she's been ace. She really has. So, and you know, I think Lindy would tell you the same, is that, as you know, I think anytime you're trying to reinvent yourself, which really, I think doing this for us is for both of us, because it's not just the first time we both co-authored, but it's the first time for this brand new series that we've created. And, you know, it's like, well, I mean, you signed for four, so it's like having, you know, four babies and you hope they all come out looking good and people won't run away screaming. Really is what we're doing here. So, we've been working really hard on this series, and the first two books are entirely finished and ready to go. They're all platformed. As a matter of fact, the gentleman, Carlson, who is doing the audiobook for this series, is already working on the second one.
That's great.
So we're really excited. The third book is languishing. The manuscript is finished. And as soon as we are able, we will take the next steps with that one. We've got a lot of things ahead for the readers.
Well, so you've gone from Well, if we take it all the way back, so many steps in a career in law enforcement. And then I've also been, you know, enjoying your art, by the way, you guys. He's a very talented visual artist as well, painter. Then writing detective fiction, Detective Byron. And this now is just straight up blockbuster treasure hunter adventure, right? I mean,
right. Well, we inserted mystery into it, but yeah, no, there's a, I mean, when people say page turner, I feel like we nailed that with this series. I mean, we knew what we wanted to do. You know, like, I think it was like the writer's table having the two of us. And because she's in Virginia and I'm here up here in Maine, you know, it's like a virtual writer's table, but the two of us just really took everything we thought we would use or that we would ever want to read ourselves and put it in the bowl and turn the blender on high and you know, just really wanted to see what would come out. And I think what came out is bigger than either one of us really could have hoped. We're both very pleased with what we've done.
At what point did you think, okay, first of all, I want to co-write something? Was this an aspiration? Was this an accident?
I guess a happy accident. A lot of things were in play behind the scenes that I knew nothing about. And so really Lindy was already on board. My agent was on board. Severn River Publishing was on board. And then I got brought into the fold by Paula Meunier, my agent, who brought this to me. And, you know, immediately I was elated. You know, anytime an opportunity presents itself, really, regardless of what it is you're doing, your first instinct is, well, you know, hell yeah. And then about 2 seconds later, I went, wait a minute, you know, I don't even, co-writing? Are you serious? You know, it's scary enough up in here on a daily basis by myself. I don't know that I want to let anyone else in. And so it really took me a while to convince that I was ready to do it or that I wanted to do it. I think, you know, I was afraid of a couple of things that, you know, Lindy was an established writer already with a large following. And I was afraid, you know, maybe I wouldn't be what she was looking for, or that, you know, my writing would damage her career in some way. That was probably the first thought. And then after that, I started thinking, well, geez, I've been writing, you know, the Detective Byron mysteries, and I have a following, and people are expecting more of that. And I know already that's not what this is going to be. You know, there's certain elements I think that definitely overlap. But it's an entirely different thing. And, you know, I wasn't sure that would be off-putting for the reader or not. But at the end of the day, I got some really good advice from some people that I respect greatly, including my wife and Reed Farrell Coleman and Paula herself. And we did it. And I signed on. I think it took me about 3 months before we finally got, you know, the contract squared away. And that's another thing for anyone who's looking to co-author. There's not one contract, there's several, because you're doing a contract, your other author's doing a contract. You probably don't have the same literary agent involved, yeah, like we did not, and you're doing really separate and joint contracts at the same time. So there's a lot to it.
It gets a little murky. Now, when you, I can totally see how you'd be thinking, are my people going to follow me on this journey? This is so different. And right, are hers going to be appalled at this journey because all of a sudden Bruce is on it with her and, you know, all those fears and stuff. But exciting too, because if you're going to branch out into something different, you are not adventuring into the great alone, right? You're not, right. You're doing it with somebody else. So did you guys take a while to figure out a way to make it work, or did this magic just start to happen from the beginning? Because it would be hard for me to figure out how to make my stuff work with somebody else's stuff.
I think, you know, I mean, you really don't know what you don't know. You know, I think we waded in cautiously. I know one of the things that when we were first talking about doing this, and I still needed to kind of come around, you know, I act like Lindy was all for it, but then again, you'd have to ask her that question, but I feel like she was, you know, but I said, so, you know, she had done a lot of the outlining for the first book already, what she imagined this to be and what she imagined the series to be, but not everything was fleshed out yet. And so I said, geez, why don't you give me what you have for, you know, the outline of the first two chapters and let me play with it and see if you like what I come up with. And so I did. I sat down and, you know, the weird thing about this whole thing is that as I read the notes that she gives me for a scene or for a chapter, I have now gotten to the point where it's like I go and I, you know, here I am dating myself. I go click the VCR on, and now the scene is playing for me, and I'm recording what's happening, what the characters are saying, and where it's taking place. It's just there. And I know that sounds goofy, probably. Maybe not to every writer listening, but to a lot of readers that would seem goofy. But I do that. I literally climb down into this Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole, and I write until I'm tired, and then I climb back out, and I do this every day. And yeah, for whatever reason, what she's writing, I can identify with.
And so played for you. It just took over this. It just started playing from what she'd written.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the characters really came to life quickly. We tinkered with things early on because, you know, neither one of us really knew these characters. We knew what we imagined or what we hoped they would be, but we, you know, we didn't even really know the dynamic yet.
Yeah.
And it didn't take long before the, you know, Avery Turner and Carter Moseley literally came to life. And now they're constantly in both of our heads. And and Harrison, which is like Avery's right hand, her deceased mother's former partner, and they were both NYPD homicide detectives. And he is so much fun to write. He gets all the cool lines. our editor calls him the Eeyore of the series, but his lines and he's just great. He really is. He's a nice offshoot and sort of a go-between the two of them. And he's just, they're all fun to write, but Harrison, I think, might be my favorite. So
in writing this mystery within a treasure hunt, did you mm-hmm. find yourself missing the procedural, you know, that you had cut your teeth on with the really fantastic Detective Byron books?
Thank you. Thank you. Not missing it. I mean, it's just entirely different. And, you know, I'm actually back writing another procedural series now for Seven River, the Detective Justice Mysteries, which the first one of those won't be out till next year. But it's two totally different writing things. And I can, believe it or not, and this the writers out there listening will hate me for this, but when I started working on the first manuscript of the Justice series, I was at the same time, I was only doing that on weekends. And during the week, I would write the Turner and Moseley Files books. And believe it or not, because they're so different, it's not just the storyline. It's because a procedural is not the same as what we're currently writing together.
Right.
So it's like, it's just two different things. It's like the difference between reading, I don't know, romance versus horror. They're not the same. And,
yeah.
Although the, you know, there's mystery elements and, you know, you're trying to find a treasure and you're trying to find bad guys that are responsible for committing crimes and, put the facts of history together. So there is an investigative format that you still follow, but it's not, you know, it's not a procedural. So
right. It sounds like a lot of fun. And I am a little jealous that you're able to slip in and out of those books. I always tell myself I'm going to juggle writing more than one book at once, but the furthest I get is an outline. And then I'm like, oh, my head. And, you know, and I think I'll finish this one before I go to the next one. And then I'm sorry. I'm always sorry that I didn't try harder. But now I want you to know that this is an accident, but I'm actually wearing one of my main shirts. One of the things that I love about Bruce is that he's, do you live in the Portland area?
Oh, we're about 18 miles west of Portland.
So Rangeley is the area where my husband and I have a house that his family's had for 55 years and that we spend a month or so every year at. And so I just absolutely love reading books with ties to Maine and imagining all of the wonderful times we have there. And we love Portland. So
It's a great area. I mean, this year I don't know that we got all four seasons, but normally we get our fair share of all the seasons. And it's funny because you know, winter and summer, and everybody has their little thing. But there's nothing like a great, brilliant autumn in the fall.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, if you don't know what foliage is, come to Maine during the fall, and you'll get to see it firsthand.
You guys, it's so spectacular. You kind of have to do it. I mean, you really, New Hampshire, Maine, you know, but I'm kind of partial to Maine. That, and I absolutely believe that the best leaves in Maine are from, you know, basically right where we are at Moosuc-Magunsic Lake.
Yeah,
it's just so incredibly, I can't even describe it. So anyway, I had to throw in that I'm wearing a canoeing shirt for you today that's from Marangely. So
there we go.
There you go. And you're also, I mean, because you don't have enough to do, you do a lot of podcasting.
Yes. Yeah. yeah, I've actually done a few guest things as the actual interviewer for Authors on the Air.
Yeah.
Pam Stack dragged me into that, and she's great. And it's so much fun to talk to the writers that you read, you know, the writers you love and writers you don't necessarily know that you're trying to get to know. It's a cool way to stay in connection. But I do a lot of these as well, which is nice because, you know, you get a chance to get your own book out there, which is lovely too. So,
you know. It is. And you guys, I know you're going to love Bruce's books, Bruce and in this case, Lindy's as well, and hers individually. So I want you to go check them out. But I also want to switch gears here a little bit on you guys and on Bruce. And I'm going to rat him out for something. He's trying to hide something with his head back there. He was on the cover of a magazine that is so cool.
There it is.
It's a great picture. Cover of Killer Nashville, which is fantastic.
It's like me.
There you go. That's perfect.
Right. You're
sitting. But he's on the cover. He's a past winner of the Silver Falchion for procedural investigation, though, I think, right? I won for Best Mystery 1 year. So we're like...
That's
our connection. That's our connection.
That is very cool. Right?
But I always, with my guests, do a couple of questions from what I call the speed round. And this is just so that the diehards out there can see the ways in which you're the same and the ways in which you're different from the wide variety of guests that come across this show. So here we go. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, if you were to... let's say if you were going to imagine that one of the characters, Avery or Turner, Turner or Mosley, I just did
her name tonight,
Avery or Turner, she has a split personality. Now, if you were to see one of them having a drink at happy hour, what would they be ordering?
Carter Mosley would probably have, he could have anything, but you know, it's possibly a high-end beer, something like that. Avery is a little more discerning in her liquor tastes, and I'm thinking something along the lines of a single malt or a nice wine, something along those lines. She has earned the right to purchase pretty much anything she wants as a young billionaire trying to find her way in the world. So she's definitely realizing that she's got the access to the best of everything, and she's going to try it out. So
that's right. She should enjoy it. By golly, she's earned
right?
it.
Absolutely.
And if you had to choose between sushi and pizza.
Oh, pizza.
Pizza all the way.
All day. Pizza all day.
I have yet to guess wrong on that answer with my guests. I take about 15 minutes to get to know them. I'm like, okay, he's a pizza guy. Pizza. Right. And if you were to get to pick, in addition to the already cool careers you've had, something else to be for a day, it would be what?
Oh... Well, probably an artist, because that was my other thing. I mean, I people talk about that, how you could do one or the other or both. And I couldn't do both at the same time. You know, I'm taking care of that need for that side of my brain. But I guess if you wanted to throw something else, even a musician.
A musician, too. What do you play?
I feel they're all this. I don't. I sing.
I did sing.
Yeah, not great. But, you know, I was in a band for a while. And, but I love... I just think they're all very creative and very similar art forms where you're really storytelling. You're trying to evoke mood. You know, it's about layering, and it's about contrast, you know, all those things. I think we're storytellers. And I think you can do that in all those different mediums.
I find that often when I'm trying to describe how I write, that I hear myself talking about music or about art. And I'm a singer too, but I am not a visual artist. But to me, writing feels like you know, you're laying down the notes until there are no more there's no more unharmonious sounds anymore. And until what you are coming across and through is the whole melody, the whole beautiful symphony, if you will. So anyway, it's funny you talk about that. But what really occurred to me as you were talking is, when working as you did so many years in law enforcement, did you feel like that creative side of yours was tapped into for that job as well? Or was that taking a totally different side of Bruce?
You know, I think during that time, that felt stunted to me. There was, you know, there was no growth in that. You know, your creativity was limited to trying to think outside the box or think like the person you were chasing after that was responsible mm-hmm. for the crime. You know, creativity doesn't enter into report writing and writing affidavits for search warrants or arrest warrants. You know, it is what it is. Just the facts, ma'am, is a joke, but it's a trope for a reason.
Right.
So yeah, there wasn't that. And I think had I known that experience, those three decades of experience were going to shape my future and lead me back to writing, I might have had a different, you know, feel about it, or maybe paid more attention to what was happening from a creative standpoint.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really didn't know that it was going to lead back to this.
When were you earlier in your life intending to pursue writing or identifying as a writer?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So. I so badly wanted to. I've got this is a little side story, but I have a hand typed with correction tape and the whole deal, a letter from Stephen King. I think I got it in 1976. And I was writing a paper at the time. And I had an in, or so I thought. One of my classmates, Nathan Pillsbury, was a relative, because Stephen King's mom's maiden name was Pillsbury. And so I used that in to try and get some insight that I could use in the paper I was writing. And he didn't get back to me for quite a while. I just figured I was never going to hear anything. And he, as it turns out, he was on tour for a book. Go figure. And but he did get back to me, and it's hand signed. I've still got the envelope and the cancel postmark and the whole deal. And he took the time to type this thing out on a typewriter. And that meant more to me than anything, I think, at that point. I loved reading. I loved writing, you know, even as a kid, storytelling and stuff. And reading Salem's Lot for the first time was the thing that pointed my compass in the right direction. I said, this is what I want to do. You know, it doesn't have to be horror, but I want to write stories that the readers can't put down, you know.
I love that. I think that is so cool that you have that. Thank goodness you didn't lose it in a move or being right. too young to appreciate what you had. That is right. That is super, super cool. So if you were to win the lottery, mm-hmm. what were the first five things you would spend your winnings on?
Oh, well, you know, I don't know. You know, probably obviously the first few would be something wasteful. I'd have to, I love old cars. So I probably would go out and buy myself a Shelby or something cool like that from the 60s. But I think the coolest thing about, especially when you see these big jackpots, which seems to be the going trend lately, would be to be able to play Santa Claus anonymously to deserving groups, deserving people. You know, there's not enough of that philanthropic effort in the world. And I think the ones that we look up to probably aren't the ones we should, because everybody knows who they are. Like they go out and tell everybody they do it. The ones we should be looking up to are probably the ones you don't know about. And there's just so many great causes. I think that would be the best ever, to have so much money that you're just looking for causes. I think that'd be great.
And I imagine you saw a lot of people hurting and in need in the job that you held. You know, you see firsthand that people could really use a pick me up. I've got to tell you, my husband would love you so much. First of all, he is a big Stephen King fan, but he is also really, really, really into music and some of the stuff you're saying. So this whole time I've been like, how do we hook up with Bruce next time we're in Maine? Because my husband would love you. And Shelby Cobra from the 60s, dream car.
Oh, that's you. Right.
I mean, hello. I keep telling my husband one of these days I'm going to get a windfall deal, and that's the first thing I'm going to do, babe. So I'm just right. getting you that Shelby Cobra. Right.
And then use that as your, you got to be with it for every cover photo on the back of all your books. From that point
there you go. Right. I love that. I love that. Okay. A few writer related questions before I let you go. I'm guessing, just on what you've said so far, that you're a bit of a plotter instead of a pantser. You plan out, or do you just let the muse just move you?
You know, every book is different. I've been able to write much quicker with Lindy's plotting, which I think probably secures the whole argument that you probably should be a plotter. But my brain doesn't work like that. I mean, I really, what I end up having to do is I start writing chapters before I ever really get into any deep plotting. And then I just sort of do that as I go. And the reason for that is because if you're writing a new series and you don't know who the characters are, I don't think you can plot a good book. I think you have to have some semblance of an understanding of what makes the characters tick, who they are. And until you start writing them, I don't think they honestly reveal themselves to you. Once they start to do the talking and the plotting for you, that actually takes some of that off your plate. So
I totally agree with that. You know, by the time I'm a couple of books into a series, it's like, well, I can sit down and tell you what they're going to do now. But the first one, you're just staring at the screen, waiting right. for them to speak to you. It's like, okay, right. I guess I better start typing. all right. And are you the kind of writer that has a particular place that you go to get into your headspace, like a favorite place to write in with a favorite way of doing it and clothes that you're wearing? Are you a free-spirited writer?
I can write anywhere, honestly. I've gotten really good at actually spending time keeping my butt in the seat here in my writing nook, because it's kind of got everything I need here. You know, I got the jazz music playing in the other room and air conditioner when I need it in the summertime, and it's quiet. You know, it's good. But sometimes if I need that kick in the pants, I'll go to a local library. And as we all know, during COVID, that was something that was taken away from me, and I never missed it more than when I couldn't do that. So I occasionally will go out to a library, and they all know me. So I get a quiet corner someplace, and some of them spoil me rotten with coffee and occasional treats that I don't need. And it's just great. It's like going to work. You know, if you're stuck at home because you're looking for those things that will distract you, like cleaning the house or doing the laundry, the library doesn't have any of those options available. So you will write if you go to the library.
To say, bye, I'm headed
right.
to work.
Yeah. right. Yeah. Deadlines and clean houses. There's definitely a correlation.
It's very frowned on for you to have big conversations with your buddies in the middle of the library, too. So you can say, right. yeah, right. I'm working.
I tell people, I go, you know, the irony of all of this, having my life go in this direction, was, you know, I remember being that kid with his buddies that used to get kicked out of the library for being disruptive. And man, we've come a long way.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I've loved this whole chat. I know that this series is going to be as successful as everyone has said, but I hope you just have the best time with it, Bruce.
Thank you.
And thanks for being on the show. And all of you that have been watching, let's wave him a good big goodbye. We'll see you hopefully some other time on the show, Bruce. I'm going to pop you out. See ya. And you guys, thank you so much for joining me. PamelaFagan.Hutchins, that's where you're going to get the past shows and the upcoming shows. You're also, if you want, going to be able to find my books in all formats and where to get them there. And here we go. Last thing every time. This has been a solely owned and copyrighted production of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, a digital media group with shows playing in over 153 countries and over 4 million viewers and listeners like you. Appreciate the heck out of you. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, go read a good book. I'm going to recommend you also go out and pre-order The General's Gold. And with that, I bid you, hold on, wait, I got to take this banner off. I'm not going to be the dummy that has this play with our outro again. Here we go. Thanks for joining us today on Crime and Wine, chats with crime fiction authors and Pamela Fagan Hutchins. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll check back in with us next time for more thrills, suspense, and stories that will mystify, sometimes horrify, and always leave you wanting more.